Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Otro robo. No parece Couto, se la lleva Rodrigo con el balón. Progresa Rodrigo, chuta Rodrigo. Y gol de Rodrigo. Marcó el Madrid, marcó Rodrigo, Real Madrid 4, Girona 0.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of La Liga Lowdown. Match day 24 recap is upon us. I'm your host Matt Clark, delighted to be joined for his pod debut by Ben Sully. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Happy to make my debut. I'll say long-awaited debut, but I'm not sure if anyone's been waiting for it, but I'm happy to be here. That's the main thing.
Well, we certainly have, Ben, and more than happy to have you alongside in what's been another fabulous weekend in La Liga. There's been some absolute partidazos, particularly on Sunday, but we have to start in the big Saturday evening clash at the Bernabeu, which saw first take on second, and anyone apart from Real Madrid fans, we're all hoping for a Girona victory to keep this title race interesting. Unfortunately, Real Madrid had other ideas and put in a phenomenal 4-0 crushing of Girona. What were your thoughts on this game?
Well, going into the game, I thought maybe Girona had the upper hands purely on the day leading up to it, where we had Dovbyk pass fit and then obviously Rudiger being ruled out injured, making Real Madrid basically play with no centre-backs. Surprising to see, obviously, Carvajal line up as a left centre-back rather on the right side, and then Tchouaméni on the right side. But maybe if there was any doubts, that was all gone after 45 minutes, because I think that's got to be up there with some of the best football you see in the first half from Real Madrid. An absolute complete performance, like I said, especially in that first half. They protected the centre-backs impressively. They were happy to press at times, but a lot of the time they were happy to go compact, kind of defend the width of their box. And I think that helped them kind of negate the concern about having no centre-backs, because they really stopped Girona picking the ball out on the edge, trying to get up the link-up play. I think people like Savio, Tiskankov, Dovbyk, they really didn't get into the game at all. And obviously in the final third, Vinicius and Bellingham was just sensational. Vinny's first goal was just sublime. You if we're going to be harsh, you could say maybe Girona stood off him, but they probably looked at it and thought, do you know what, we've got him boxed in here. What else can he do apart from hit it in the top corner? And of course he goes and hits it in the top corner. And then obviously the pass for the second goal was sublime. It's like Luka Modric just been kind of holding training sessions. The outside of the boot was just absolutely brilliant. And I think what you saw there as well for that goal was how hard it is to defend those runs from deep with Bellingham, especially someone like Girona where they're kind of aggressive. So that line's quite high up. You can it gives you, if you watch the goal back, you can see the midfield. I think it might be Ivan Martin, I'm not 100% sure, but you could see him kind of notice Bellingham on the wrong side of him, kind of point to his defenders, because he's obviously not going to, he's going to pass him off. But by the time the defenders even realise he's there, he's bit up a full head of steam, gone around the goalkeeper, and that's that. So the first 45 minutes, it was just a complete performance. Like I said, it was a brilliant performance.
Yeah, as Carlo Ancelotti summed up in his tweet, the best game in the best moment. And yeah, it sums up Carlo, isn't it? Just completely down to earth and just keeping it simple. And he says, right, I've got no defenders, no centre-backs anyway. Courtois's been out all season. Militao's been out all season. Alaba's now out. Rudiger's now out. What are we going to do? Oh, we'll chuck Danny Carvajal in there. Tchouameni in there. We'll protect them. But you know what? We're better going forward anyway. Vinny, Rodrigo, Bellingham. I mean, all of them on the score sheet. An absolutely frightening trio when they're on form. And as you say, Vinicius in particular just kind of woke up and thought, yep, this is my game today. And the goal was reminiscent of his goal against City in the semi-final in the Champions League last season, I thought, and many have said. So, yeah, I guess for Girona, this was kind of what everyone was fearing. When would their unbelievable form come to an end? And I think it's worth, again, reiterating how impressive they have been this season. But the gap is 5 points now. It's pretty hard to see any title race, don't you think?
I think, yeah, I agree with that. I think, obviously, it's Madrid's to lose. The only team really stopping Real Madrid now is Real Madrid themselves. But I think we can't lose that Girona is brilliant, that they're there. Second place is brilliant. Obviously, we really want a title race, but to still be there, to still be, even if the next 3-4 months isn't as good as the first half of the season, if they stay in the top four, that's still an amazing season. Their fourth ever season in La Liga to get top four is still an amazing achievement. So I don't think that we should kind of let that performance overshadow all their good work they've done this season. Especially when you look at, they've lost twice this season, they're both to Real Madrid. There's not really a massive disgrace in that. So I can't see them coming back. Like I said, partly because also I don't see Real Madrid giving up enough points in the next few months. The only advantage I suppose Girona have is that Real Madrid probably, if they go deep into the Champions League, will have a few more games to worry about. But I would suggest that would only come into play if the gap's down to two points, 3 points maybe. But coming into this period of games of Girona, of Real Sociedad, Real Madrid and then Athletic Club next week, I thought if they could get out of that and only be 3 points behind, they would still be in it. So even if yesterday they drew and then next week they somehow went and won at San Mamés, you think, OK, they're still in it. Just stick with Real Madrid for as long as possible and try and take it, try and just run them close. But yeah, I think it did feel like last night, kind of. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news as soon as it, but it does feel like it has kind of killed it a little bit.
Well, the good news is we've got plenty of other races that we're excited about, and as Michel said, he was obviously missing from the touchline serving that ban, but he did say post game that this isn't really Girona's league. Their league is Betis, Real Sociedad, Valencia. That kind of area of the table is where Girona are, and or at least should be, and even then they'd probably be punching above their weight. So again, managing expectations. And the good news for Girona fans out there, as bad as Saturday was, they got some pretty good news on Sunday because neither Atleti nor Barca were able to take advantage of their defeat. I was going to go to Sevilla, Atleti, but I think we have to go to Montjuic and the game we've just finished watching, where Barca inexplicably once again conceded 3 goals at home. And this is to a Granada side who had scored 1 goal away from home since, I think, October. I mean, we'll get on to Barca and Lamine Yamal in a minute, the good and the bad and the ugly of Barca. But first of all, for Granada to come here and score 3, they're unbeaten in 5 against Barca. It's really strange, this crazy run they've had.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. I saw Barcelona are going to be sick of the sight of Granada. But I think, yeah, it was encouraging performance. And I think encouraging couple of performances for Granada, especially off the back of the January window. They did make quite a few signings there. So they weren't giving up on staying in the top flight. It wasn't a kind of a case of we're just going to accept and look at next season. They still want to try and fight over the next few months. And obviously last week, playing a good proportion of the game against Las Palmas with 10 men, still getting a point out of that and obviously leading for a good period of that game. And obviously today, it was a brilliant, brilliant performance. Obviously out a little bit by some poor Barca defending, which does seem to be happening at home quite a bit. The inconsistency at home in the last few games is a cause for concern, but kind of reflects their whole season. That kind of consistency has troubled them. But yeah, for Granada, it's a very, very encouraging performance. Maybe, obviously, there would have been more momentum going into next week if they had held on and won. But I think you can't argue going away to Barcelona, picking up a point when you're trying to stay in the division. And maybe that can be the sort of kind of performance that gives them a bit of momentum they can build upon. Because I think next week they've got Almeria. So you'd hope maybe for their sake that they go in there and get a win. And then all of a sudden, you might have gone 3 games unbeaten and you start thinking, hang on, we could stay up here. But yeah, I think the thing for this game was really one of the big moments was just before half time when Barca looked like they were going to go 2-0 up. They had an incisive counter attack, and it looked like Lewandowski was going to put it in there, but Martin Ongla cleared it off the line, and then 2 minutes later, Piastri lays it off, and Ricardo Sanchez, I think it is, hits it. That's it. And you think, hang on, all of a sudden they've gone from potentially being 2-0 down, and now they're down their level. So, yeah, I think that was quite a crucial part of the game. But, yeah, I think overall, Granada have got to be happy.
Indeed, they do. 15% of their points this season have come against Barca. So read into that whatever you want, listeners. And, yeah, Piastri making a great impact on loan already at Granada. Man United fans probably thinking, where has this guy been? But, yeah, good to see him getting some action. I'm sure Uruguay fans and Bielsa too are pretty happy with that. As for Barca then, Ben, again, I'm not quite sure where we go because I've chatted to Roman so many times about this and before, you know, Rory and Paco as well. They're absolutely shipping goals. And Ter Stegen was back today. Obviously he's lacking match fitness. He's been out for 3 months. So of course he might be rusty, but his distribution was so poor in the first half in particular, giving the ball away constantly, which probably didn't give the defence much encouragement. But even so, to concede three to Granada is a real shock. I mean, Villarreal, we know they can score goals. They're down the bottom, but they have been scoring goals. Granada haven't really been as much. And when you look at Barca and the goals conceded column, 33 stands out like a sore thumb in that top half. They've conceded as many goals as Cadiz, who are 18th. And you just can't compete like that. And that's probably why the title defence has fallen by the wayside. Now, Xavi said after the Villarreal defeat, you know, I'm stepping away. This is to try and settle the ship and get us to the end of the season in some kind of rhythm. They had two wins in the week, but then this game, it kind of feels like an absolute regression again, kind of one step forward, probably three steps back. How do you assess Barca where they are right now?
Well, yeah, I think that's the thing. The last two performances, maybe not convincing, but they got the results and that was the main thing. I think it's a weird situation because if you come out of a game like today where they drew 3-3 against the relegation threatened side, you'd go, the manager's in trouble. He's kind of sacrificed himself already to try and kind of get the performances and get some results. The defence is, like you said, is the main thing. And that is the main reason why they're not in the title race. Because you look last year, that their whole success was built on a strong backline. Fortunate at times and maybe some brilliant goalkeeping last season from Ter Stegen. But yeah, obviously they're injuries. So moving around your defence never helps. You want a settled backline. But even like today or Sunday recording this, where the second goal, I think it was, where Kubasi gets caught literally under the ball for a simple ball that Koundé looks like he's going to clear away. And those are just simple defensive mistakes that have kind of hampered them this season, especially at home in recent weeks. But I think that's probably a big concern. Like you said, you can maybe handle conceding, or you don't want to from Barcelona's perspective, but you can say, okay, you can see why Girona and Villarreal might score but a lot of goals. But to do it against Granada is certainly a cause for concern. But you do wonder if when they play Napoli in the first leg, if that doesn't go to plan, what happens then? Do they think, well, do we have to make a change early? Because it's all well and good, Xavi saying, okay, I'll go at the end of the season. But also, from Barcelona, from the league standpoint, from a pride point of view, it's never that good being that far from Real Madrid. But really, the title isn't where they need to be looking. They really need to be... Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with the Champions League places, whether it is going to be 4 or 5, but say it is 4. You've got Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, and an Athletic Club, all three of them going for 2 spots there by the looks of it.
Yeah.
And you think, well, if performances, okay, or they can't find a consistency and they're still struggling to kind of get away from fifth place, and like I said, if the Champions League first leg doesn't go well, then maybe questions get asked of Xavi and whether they have to make a decision before the end of the season. Because, okay, of course, he's an icon, he's a legend. It's nice if he can go out on his own accord, even if it has been a poor season. But yeah, at the end of the day, and also there's a lot of money at stake. And if the hierarchy start thinking the Champions League is at risk, then they might certainly take action.
Indeed, yeah. It's going to be fascinating to see how that tie goes, because again, Napoli themselves having an awful title defence. Much worse than Barca, has to be said. They're down in ninth in Serie A, having also lost away at Milan on Sunday night. So they're in all kinds of a mess too. It's kind of like the fans of each club are looking at each other going, it's okay, we're bad, but we're not as bad as them. So that could be probably the intriguing tie of the round in the Champions League, just to see kind of who's less bad in that knockout game.
Yeah.
But yeah, as it is, 10 points off the top, almost definitively out of that title race now. And yeah, only 3 points clear of Atleti and only 6 clear of Athletic, who have a game in hand. So all to play for in that top four race. Speaking of Atleti, Ben, we saw them lose their home record in the Coppa in midweek. Their away record wasn't great, but then they were going to the Sánchez Pizjuán, where Sevilla's home record was certainly questionable, having had not won since September. So what happens? Well, Sevilla get that all-important win to make it a great week for them, back-to-back victories. And once again, it was the new prodigal son, Isaac Romero, with the goal in the first half. Atleti unable to reply.
Yeah, I think if you look at Sevilla, En-Nesyri coming back from the Africa Cup of Nations, and obviously Isaac Romero, those two have given them a bit of impetus up front now. They do look a bit dangerous. They do look like they can do something going forward. Obviously, I would say for Sevilla to get those couple wins is good. Gets them, hopefully, for their sake, gets them out of the danger zone. But in regards to Fleti, yeah, it was a really, really bad day for him, because obviously not only the result on the pitch, but Alvaro Morata going off injured in tears on the bench. I think I was seeing after the game, Simeone was suggesting it wasn't going to be too serious, but obviously you never know until you get the diagnosis back. So yeah, for Atletico Madrid, it's been pretty poor few days. Obviously lost 1-0 to Athletic Club in the Copa del Rey, and then for them, they look at the next month or so and think this is going to be really big for our season. Obviously they have Inter Milan in the Champions League, who are probably probably one of the best teams in Europe at the moment,
on form.
And if they can come back in San Mamés, is going to be an incredibly tough ask. And like we're saying, if I get Barcelona, of course, for Atletico Madrid not to get Champions League would be a disaster as well. So I think it was one of the main weird things for Atletico Madrid this season, or in recent weeks, has been their away form. Brilliant at home, obviously, for the most part, but their away, they can't replicate that form, and that is costume, and that is given Athletic Club a chance. And yeah, I think that's certainly a cause for concern for Simeone.
It certainly is. He kind of was poking fun or irony at the fixture list again, sort of saying, thanks to La Liga, thanks to the Federation, we started so badly because we didn't have any time to prepare. So another manager complaining about the congested calendar. But again, when you look at their away form over a period of time, it's only 1 win in 7. And that draw at the Bernabeu last week was kind of a last gasp equaliser too. So that would have been 6 defeats in 7. For them, huge few weeks coming up. You mentioned Inter. They got Las Palmas. They have to go at San Mamés away in the Copa. Some potentially tricky Liga games too. So a really massive February, March period for Barca and for Atleti. But for Sevilla, a fantastic result. Puts them 6 clear now of the drop zone as they overtake Mallorca and Celta. So a little bit of breathing space for Kike Sanchez Flores. And finally, that home victory that Sánchez Pizjuán was absolutely yearning for. And the atmosphere at full time just showed how important that was for all of them. One more game before we hit the break, and that was an unexpected partidazo at the Colosseum. You were saying off air, Ben, this would have been game of the day until we just saw what happened at Montjuic. But at the Colosseum, it had everything. Getafe scoring 3, Celta thinking they had a draw, but then losing at the very end from a shoulder goal from Jaime Mata. And even Bordalas got knocked over on the touchline. What's not to love?
I think that was when it started going downhill for Getafe, when Bordalas got pushed over. He really looked like he winded himself. But yeah, he kind of got back up and saw his side concede 2 goals. Iago Aspas, again, being instrumental for Falta. You think this he keeps getting older and they can't keep relying on him, but they keep having to turn to him. He obviously put the ball through for Manquillo, I think it was, to set up Strand Larsen, and then he set up, I think it was Allende, to score his first goal. So yeah, at that stage it looked like it was going to be 2-2, and if anyone was going to win it, the momentum was kind of with the visitors. And then obviously the massive sucker punch at the other end, and kind of going from the high of last week when Celta beat Osasuna, kind of a surprise big victory, and now they kind of stopped any sort of momentum building with that. And I think for Rafa Benitez, I feel all season I've kind of thought Rafa Benitez seems to be under pressure, but whether there's a financial thing there, he always seems to stay in the job. And but it's still obviously a cause for concern there. They still can't get away, like we're talking about Sevilla, and them starting to get away now. The Celta just can't eke away from the drop zone, so they're very much still in trouble.
Absolutely. And props to Getafe with another win at home. They're very much in the European race, I would suggest. Only 2 points off eighth and only four off seventh. So Euro Getafe potential, do you think?
You can't write them off. I suppose you can't. Partly because I don't think you can write Bordalas off. I suppose...
Knock him down and he gets back up.
yeah, quite literally. But I would still say, you would suggest that Real Sociedad, Real Betis would kind of hold on to those last places. But you can't write off again. Obviously, they've got European commitments, so that's a distraction from their point. I suppose they're definitely in the race, and you can't, like you said, can't write them off.
Beautiful stuff. Well, that was the early game on Sunday. When we come back after the break, we'll review everything else that we haven't talked about yet so far this weekend. Join us in a minute.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown, Match Day 24 recap. I'm here with Ben Sully on debut. He's looking fine there. Just got a couple of assists already to his name. Betis had a good weekend because, as we say, obviously quite a few of the top sides failing to win. Betis took advantage by opening up the weekend with a trip down to Carranza and winning 2-0 at Cadiz. This, of course, was Pellegrini versus Pellegrino, which I... in my infantile humour, absolutely love. But it was Pellegrini that got the upper hand. Pellegrino's first defeat as Cadiz boss. An early goal from William Jose. And then Pablo Fornals in the second half, rounding up a 2-0 win. First of all, Betis, impressive?
Yeah, I think so. Especially with Isco now injured. To see kind of the other players step up. Obviously, Pablo Fornals coming in from West Ham. I think it was a solid away performance. You can't get too carried away from it, but I think they did what they needed to do. It just felt like a game they had to get through. They got the 3 points. It was a composed performance. They were never in danger, really. Partly that's probably partly to do with Cardiff's lack of attack and threat. But yeah, I don't think you could ask for much more, and certainly encouragement with Pablo Fornals scoring his first goal, which, and those sort of players, him and Nabil Fekir, could be important with no Isco now. No man of the matches as well now for Isco as well.
Indeed, it was an absolute lottery who was going to get it this week. I mean, probably still give it to him sitting watching at home. One player who did stand out, though, was probably Johnny. The US star there, playing just his fourth game, getting the assist for William Jose. You impressed by his performance?
Yeah. I think, again, coming into the league, you can't ask for much more. And I think that's probably good for Betis on the whole. If you want your signings to make an immediate impact, sometimes they don't. And but obviously him and Pablo Fornals now have got kind of up and running. Provided an assist. So I don't think, you can ask for much more encouragement for him. I think he's only a young lad, early 20s. So, to see that is very, very promising.
Mm, indeed. Probably the thing to take away from this game, though, was the protests, which kind of delayed the end of the game. Loads of yellow jackets, raincoats, ponchos, whatever you want to call them, were all kind of thrown onto the pitch by the Cadi fans in protest at the team's really poor form. I mean, you have to go back a long, long way since they last won a game, 1st of September. Kike Setién was in charge of Villarreal. That's how long ago it was, listener. It's just been a winless run. Hardly any goals scored either. That's their biggest issue, as you said earlier. Only 15 goals in 24 games. And to be honest, if they can't score, you can't see them getting out of trouble. So you can understand the protest.
Yeah, it was a very bizarre end to the game. At one stage, one just on the pitch and the referee had taken it off, and then he's turned around and about 20, 30, 40 more have come in at him. It was so much so that I think the ref blew up for about a minute before he was supposed to. It is very, very bleak for Cadiz. The first kind of couple of games under Maurizio Pellegrino, you have the couple of goalless draws and you think, okay, is that a platform to build on? But obviously now you've tasted defeat, so still yet to score under him, and it is very, very bleak. I was thinking, you look at the next three games and that feels like it could define their season. I think it's Osasuna, Celta and Rayo to come next, and then after that they play I think it's like three of the top seven, so in the three of the top seven the next four games after that. So I think for them it does feel like their season is on the next three games, otherwise they are going to get cut adrift. I would like a Cadiz or a Granada from a neutral point of view to start picking up points to try and give us a bit of a battle down the bottom. But yeah, at the moment it's very, very bleak, and like you said, 15 goals is pretty atrocious. At the moment they look like a team destined for the second division. I don't think you can get away from that. So for their sake, hopefully they can find it, but obviously you hope a new manager would have come in and obviously would have found that kind of solved the attacking problem straight away, but that hasn't been the case. So yeah, they're certainly up against it to retain their top flight status.
Indeed. And one of those teams who had been down the bottom and looking like they might potentially get dragged into it was Mallorca, of course, distracted by the Copa del Rey semi-finals. However, they hosted Rayo this weekend and got a late winner from the Pirate, Marici, 91st minute to win 2-1 after Rayo had equalised through Alvaro Garcia. Again, a much-needed win for Mallorca. And now it's Rayo who are almost the team looking over their shoulders, because they're only, they're seven clear of the drop still, but they're only four clear of Celta. So very much just about in the mix. As for Mallorca, they moved themselves six clear along with Sevilla. So again, either of these sides you think are in trouble, or you think both will have enough to stay up?
I think both will have enough to stay up. I think both managers came into this game under real pressure. Obviously, Javier Aguirre's got Mallorca to the semi-final of the Copa del Rey, but you could argue that's the only thing that saved him so far. I think they'll both do enough. But again, like I was saying, in regards to Cadiz, I don't know if that's more to do with the fact the teams in the bottom three are maybe not good enough to get out of there or close the gap. But I think there'll still be concern, especially at Rayo. Rayo's is going pretty poorly at the moment. Obviously, for Francisco, it was going to be always a hard task to replace Adonai Iraola. But it's kind of been a bit of a strange season, because they started it quite well. Obviously, yeah, you had the heavy defeat to Atletico Madrid, but apart from that, the first couple of months weren't that bad. But in recent weeks, they have really struggled. And in the last few seasons, you always think Vallecas is a really tough place to go. Obviously, they're playing away this weekend, but normally they relied really a lot on their home form. And this year, I think they won once in the league at home. So obviously, that's a massive cause for concern for them. So I think, although they'll, I think Rayo will do enough, and I think they have enough quality to stay up. I have doubts whether the manager will see out for when it comes to May or June time. Because, yeah, the way they're going, he could really, really do with some points and some wins.
Mm. Well, good for him that they've got Real Madrid and Girona next.
Start packing his bags already.
Well, potentially, you never know. This league is bizarre, so they could do a Granada and get a point against Real Madrid. Who knows? Yeah. But yeah, as you say, Rayo, if home form was the league table, they would be 19th. So yeah, Vallecas, very much not a fortress this year. A couple more games to talk about then. We had Alaves Villarreal Saturday afternoon. Alaves took the lead. Villarreal got level through Jorge Cuenca. Quite an exciting game, this one. Both teams pretty comfortable in 12th and 13th. Bit of a classic mid-table game now, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit weird for Villarreal. You would have thought after coming off the back of the Barcelona win that they would have maybe built off that, but they've had a couple of draws which are slightly underwhelming. But there is probably a sense with Villarreal that obviously do enough to stay up, and now it's kind of damage limitation. Let's get to the end of the season, and at the end of the season, hopefully we can maybe bring in players that kind of what Marcelino wants to build at the club. So yeah, I think maybe it's not exciting for Villarreal fans, but I don't think there's the danger of relegation. From Alaves's point of view, they're doing quite well in recent weeks, and obviously Samu keeps scoring. I think it's 4 goals in the last 3 games now for him. Bad news for him, he'll probably be going back at the end of the season. But yeah, for their point of view, I don't think you can, obviously being promoted, the main thing is, can we stay up? And I think a couple of months ago, they were kind of heading towards the drop zone and looking to be in trouble. So they look like they've kind of got rid of that risk. And again, it might be not very exciting for them, but pretty sure at the start of the season they would have took a few boring few months at the end of the campaign if that kept them in the division.
Absolutely right. Speaking of Basque sides at home, Real Sociedad hosted Osasuna. Again, distraction of PSG looming on the horizon for them. Copa semi-final with Mallorca too, but they lost to Osasuna, and this was a real, I suppose it was a shock, but not a shock, because La Real have been in poor form in terms of not being able to turn draws into wins. But for Osasuna to go there and actually win was impressive. I think La Real's issue is goals, though. Is that 4 games without a goal now? Which is obviously a problem when you're facing PSG next.
Yeah, yeah. And I think maybe when they're struggling, you'd think, okay, Takekuba at the Asian Cup, him coming back, that might help them. But obviously, I think he's played in the last 2 games, Mallorca in the Copa del Rey, and then obviously against Osasuna. And it hasn't really changed that much. It's a really strange situation, I think, Real Sociedad find themselves in, because obviously last year, for their league form compared to last year, is they have really dropped, and 7th place feels like quite a bit of an underachievement. But on the other hand, you look, okay, we're in the semi-finals of Copa del Rey. If we were to get to the final, that win that, and if we could pull off a brilliant result off against PSG, you'd go, okay, that's a good season, even if we finished 7th. But the other side, if you don't win the Copa del Rey and you get knocked out against PSG, because obviously PSG, they might not have Messi and Neymar anymore, but they're still a very, very good side. And then you look and go, okay, it's been quite a very underwhelming campaign if you get knocked out of the cup competitions, because 7th place, they've still got work to do to make sure they finish in the top 7 and hope and try and get back into 6th position. And like you said, the main cause for concern is they really can't buy a goal. They just, defensively, they're okay. But yeah, they just don't have any sort of impetus in the final third. It's just real cause for concern for them, for their hopes of getting Europa League, but also against going up against PSG, if you really, really want to have hopes of getting into the next round, you've got to worry them defensively, offensively, because as good as Real Sociedad's defence is, you feel, over two legs, are you going to keep Mbappe and that at bay for that long? So you'd suggest if they are to get through that, they might have to score 3-4 goals. And at the moment, you don't see over the two legs. And at the moment, you think, where is that coming from? Mm. I think it's a big cause for concern for them.
Well, we'll see how they fare in Paris in midweek ahead. Finally, then, Las Palmas took on Valencia in another mid-table clash. But again, we talked a lot about Girona this season, but how good have Las Palmas been? Another 2-0 victory, another win, 10 wins in 24 games. Only 20 goals conceded, the best defence apart from Real Madrid in the entire division. What a job Gavi Pimienta has done.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I think if Girona weren't in the top four, this would be the story of the season. Saying that, Girona are challenging for the European places next year and last year, so I'm looking forward to Las Palmas' title challenge next season.
Oh yes,
they've been exceptional. In regards to the game, it was a weird game because I felt for the lack of chances in the game, this was heading towards a 0-0. Had 0-0 written all over it. Las Palmas probably had a bit more intent, but they didn't look like probably finding a way through. And then obviously two crosses from the left flank and in the last few minutes, and they go and win it. So yeah, from their point of view, brilliant win. To be even, we're talking about Alaves and just wanting him to be mid-table, but Las Palmas to kind of forget about worrying about staying in the division and now dreaming of potentially playing European football is unbelievable. It's just a brilliant story for them. In regards to Valencia, in their part of the game, for them, they've kind of overachieved. It's kind of apt that they're kind of level on points with Las Palmas, because those two have overachieved this season. Obviously, Valencia historically a big club, but Ruben Baraja having to work with very, very little. The only cause for concern for him would be their last two away performances. Against Atletico Madrid, they offered very little in the final third, and I think you can kind of say, okay, that's the Metropolitano. Many, many teams struggle there. But this weekend, they really, really didn't offer that much in the final third. They had a spell in the second half for about 5 minutes when Baraja made a couple of changes where they looked a little bit more threatening. But apart from that, Las Palmas were comfortable defensively, and they probably did deserve the win if someone was going to take the 3 points.
Mm. Well, that's how the weekend finished. Monday night's game is Almeria against Athletic Club, a real kind of tale of two clubs in very different form there. But that's all we have time for on tonight's show, Ben. Thank you so much for your thoughts tonight. Have you enjoyed your debut?
I have. Thank you very much. I really, really, really enjoyed it.
Brilliant. Taking the match ball away with you too. So great stuff. Look forward to having you on again very soon. We'll be back in midweek with a review of the Champions League last 16 first legs. Of course, they're split over a couple of weeks. So this week it's Real Madrid away at Leipzig and La Real in Paris. So let's see if there's some Valentine's Day romance for La Real in the City of Love, of course. Anyway, enough of my ramblings. Thank you very much, listeners. You know where to subscribe and upgrade, llonline.substack.com, for content almost every day. And we'll leave you there. Adios.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.